Zechariah 5, please, and if I could read to you just the words at the end of that chapter, we'll take them as our text this evening. Verse 9 of the chapter says, "Then lifted I up mine eyes and looked, and behold, there came out two women, and the wind was in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork, and they lifted up the ephah between the earth and the heaven. Then said I to the angel that talked with me, Whither do these bear the ephah? And he said unto me, To build it an house in the land of Shinar, and it shall be established and set there upon her own base." If I could ask you tonight at the outset, just to think about revival. Revival means life again. There's two parts to the word. The vive means life, and the re means again. Revival is life again. And as Christians, as the Church of Jesus Christ, we're looking for and we're praying for a great revival, especially in the dark and the barren days in which we live. It's our earnest prayer, the burden of our hearts, that God would breathe again new life into his church and into the testimony of the gospel. And I want to urge you to continue to pray for that revival. Remember the words of the psalmist, take them as your prayer. Wilt thou not revive us again, that thy people may rejoice in thee? But what I want to emphasize, brethren and sisters, what I want to point out very especially to you tonight is that the Bible speaks of another revival that will take place. It's a revival that's not so much thought of, and a revival that's not so much spoken about, sadly, in church circles. It is a revival of an entirely different kind, but it is a revival that is vital to your understanding of end time events. And the revival that I'm referring to is the revival of ancient kingdoms and the ancient nations upon the earth. For example, there will be a revival of the old Roman Empire, and we see that unfolding even today before our eyes in the formation of the European Union. But even more particularly, within that area which is known as the prophetic earth, the kingdom and the city of Babylon is going to be revived again. New life will be breathed into that ancient kingdom, so that it will once again hold great sway across the face of the earth. Now remember that Babylon was the first major city or major kingdom of the earth. You think of what is said of Nimrod. The book of Genesis tells us the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calneh in the land of Shinar. Note that the beginning of his kingdom was Babel or Babylon. It was the first major city, the first major kingdom upon the earth. Babylon reached its apex, the apex of its power and its glory, whenever Nebuchadnezzar was king. Do you remember that he declared, the king spake and said, Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honour of my majesty? Babylon once had great influence on the earth. But you know that that is no longer the case. Alexander the Great died in the city of Babylon. He died there after a period of heavy and prolonged drinking. And since the days of Alexander, the influence of Babylon has declined significantly. But let me stress to you, be in no doubt tonight, Babylon still exists. It is no longer the power, the force that it once was, but it has not been wiped off the face of the earth. You think of what Isaiah said. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. That's a prophecy of the utter destruction of Babylon. But as yet it has not been fulfilled. It's something that is yet future. Because remember, Peter in his first epistle, he spoke about the church in Babylon. Some people would want you to believe that that is Rome. But it's actually Babylon. He said, the church that is in Babylon, elected together with you, saluteth you. Just think of that. Babylon was still on the earth. Babylon still existed. There was a church there. Peter had been to Babylon. And Peter had ministered to the saints of God in that city. But can I say to you tonight that though Babylon may be small, it may be insignificant today, the Bible teaches that before the Lord returns, that the city of Babylon will once again be established. The city of Babylon will once again be dominant on the earth. The reality is that the first major city in the world's history will also be the last major city in the world's history. So there's going to be a revival of the city and kingdom of Babylon. Not just physically. That revival will also take place morally and spiritually. There's going to be a revival of Babylon and of what we describe as Babylonianism. And that revival, men and women, it will be great. The revival we're speaking of is something that will be complete. You think of what Isaiah said. He speaks of Babylon as the golden city. And the idea in those words is, it's going to be a city of wealth, a city of splendor. It will once again have a prominent place on the earth. The re-establishing of this city is going to be something that will be extraordinary. It will catch the attention of the whole world. And that's what Zechariah is teaching here. He's teaching it in this seventh vision that he has received and recorded here in his prophecy. Can I say to you, it's very interesting, the prophecy of Zechariah deals primarily with the re-establishment of Jerusalem. But here he gives, in this fifth and also in the sixth chapter, because remember, the chapters in the Bible dealing with Babylon come in pairs. Here in this fifth and sixth chapter of Zechariah, he gives some vital details about the re-establishment of Babylon. And can I point out that this prophecy was written after the decline of Babylon. The time of Zechariah, it was no longer the great Gentile power that it once was. Zechariah lived in the days of the decline of this kingdom. But he's speaking here, as we shall see, he's speaking of this kingdom and this city being rebuilt, being re-established upon the earth. So that means, brethren and sisters, this is something that is yet future, something that is yet before us. And we need to know about it. This is something we need to expect to be watching for. So let us consider tonight, just for a little time, what Zechariah teaches about the revival of Babylon and Babylonianism. Can I mention first of all the site of the revival? Look at the words of our text, verse 11. It says, he said unto me to build it an house in the land of Shinar. This revival, men and women, will take place in the land of Shinar or Babylon. Because remember, Shinar and Babylon are the same area. They're the same region of the earth. Think of Daniel. Daniel chapter 1, we're told that he was carried to Shinar. In other words, he was carried to Babylon. I want you to remember that and take that in. And we're talking about actual, literal Babylon. Mr. Fromo, an esteemed former secretary of the SJT, I noticed a quote of his as I did some research and reading into this subject. Babylon is Babylon on the Euphrates and not Rome on the Tiber. Does not sum it up well? And how important it is to see that, men and women. We're reading here about actual, literal Babylon, or actual, literal Shinar. That's what's being set forth, what's being spoken about. And remember that that is modern day Iraq. It's interesting that the name Iraq was given by the British. They ruled that area from 1920 to 1932. And the name Iraq came from an ancient city in that region. Came from the name Iraq. Remember the verse that we quoted a little earlier? The beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calneh in the land of Shinar. Mark it carefully. The name Iraq, the modern name, is derived from that ancient city. And remember that many Bible events took place there. Think of a few of them with me for a moment. Think of the Tower of Babel. We were all taught the story. Maybe one of the first we teach our children at home and in Sunday school. The Tower of Babel was built in Iraq, or built in the land of Babylon. Chapter 11 of Genesis, a plain in the land of Shinar. Think of Abraham. Abraham was born and brought up in Iraq or Babylon. Do you remember what Stephen said when he was preaching? The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia is in that region. It's another name for the area. Mesopotamia was the cradle of civilization. And it's Shinar, or Iraq. The name Mesopotamia means the land between the rivers. That would be the Euphrates and the Tigris. And what that means, men and women, is this. Abraham was an Iraqi. Abraham came from Babylon. He was saved in that land. And remember, the Lord told him, get thee out of thy country. Well, that was Iraq or Shinar or Babylon that the Lord was commanding him to leave. So when you read about Mesopotamia, when you're reading about the upbringing of Abraham, you're reading about this same land, the land of Shinar. Think of other references to Shinar. Think of the book of Daniel. We're told about Jehoiakim and the vessels of the Lord's house. They were all carried away to Shinar. So too was Daniel. He was carried there in his teens. In that land, Daniel became prime minister. Just think of it. Daniel was prime minister of Iraq, prime minister of Babylon. You may remember the name Tariq Aziz. He was prime minister of Iraq under Saddam Hussein. We heard that news often, or that name often in the news. Well, Daniel held that post. Daniel held the position of prime minister in Iraq or Babylon under the great Nebuchadnezzar. Think as well of Nineveh. Nineveh was the capital of Assyria. It was also in the region of Babylon or Iraq. You remember that Jonah was sent to Nineveh, sent there as a prophet, sent there to preach. So Jonah was a foreign missionary, and the Lord sent him as a foreign missionary to Iraq, sent him to Shinar, sent him to be a missionary in Babylon. Now you think of the animosity between those two nations today, between Israel and Iraq. Do you think a Jewish prophet today would want to go and live and labour and preach in Iraq? Well, you can see, you can understand why Jonah didn't want to go. You can understand why he ran away when the Lord gave him that command. But remember that under his reluctant preaching, there was a great revival in Nineveh. God was merciful to this area, this wicked area that we're considering tonight. Do remember it says in the book of Jonah, they turned to God from the least to the greatest. But what I want you to see, men and women, is that in this area that experienced that great spiritual revival, there's going to be a great material revival at the time of the end. So it's clear, many Bible events that we're all familiar with have taken place in this land, in this region of the earth. And just as it has been prominent in the past, I want you to be in no doubt. I want you to grasp tonight that same region is going to be prominent in the future. And as we watch for the signs of the end time approaching, what we need to do is watch Iraq. Keep our eyes upon it. Because the rebuilding of Babylon, the rebuilding of Iraq or Shinar, that is a clear sign of the end of the age approaching and the return of the Saviour. So I want you to see the sight of the revival. I want you to see as well the swiftness of the revival. If you look at the words of the portion, it tells us in verse 9, "Then lifted I up mine eyes and looked, and behold, there came out two women, and the wind was in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork." I want you to see that this revival that we're thinking about, it will take place swiftly and rapidly. Remember that when you're studying prophecy, one of the things that you need is patience. Because remember, God is not in a hurry. We generally are. Sadly, the day in the society in which we live is in a hurry. Everything must happen instantly. But God is not in a hurry. Think of Peter's words. "But beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing. One day is with the Lord as a thousand years, and a thousand years is one day." The Lord's not in a hurry. The Lord's not restrained or limited by time as we are. The Lord will fulfill his promises, and he will fulfill his purposes, but he will do it in his time. And we need to wait. We need to wait patiently for those purposes to unfold. Think of the magazine of the SJT, the name, watching and waiting. And that's what we need to do, brethren and sisters. We need to watch and we need to wait for these things to unfold. Think of Paul's words to the Thessalonians. He spoke about the patient waiting for Christ. And that's what we need to do. Think of James's words. "Be patient therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord." You need to be patient as you study the prophetical scriptures. Can I point out to you, in the book of Genesis, it records the Lord actually came down and stopped the building of Babylon. It says, "So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city." The Lord stopped the building of Babylon. If you think of the question, why? Why did the Lord stop that building? It was because their time had not yet come. But whenever the Lord's time does come, brethren and sisters, when the Lord begins to work, especially in that area, that region of Babylon, events will unfold very swiftly and very quickly. You think of Daniel's 70th week. It's not a very interesting study. A period of just 7 years in length. That period is yet future. It's the last period of this age. But what I want you to think about especially is how much will unfold in those few years. How much will take place in that 7 year period. Virtually the whole book of the Revelation will be fulfilled in that 7 year period. The seven last plagues, the seven last trumpets, the breaking of the covenant with Israel, the great tribulation, the two witnesses, and so on. Think of how much will unfold in those few years. It stresses how quickly end time events will take place. Think of what the book of the Revelation says. "The second woe is past, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly." Notice the word quickly there. It's clear there's going to be a swiftness to end time events. And so it will be with the building of Babylon. You think of the building of Jerusalem in the days of Nehemiah. Despite all of the opposition that he experienced and he encountered, the city was rebuilt in 52 days. Now just ponder that. Isn't that remarkable, brethren and sisters? Even in this day and age in which we live, with all the machinery, with all the technology available to rebuild the city in just 52 days, it happened quickly, swiftly, and it will be the same for Babylon. It will be obscure and almost unknown and unheard of for centuries, and then suddenly the Lord will raise it up. Zechariah says here, the wind was in their wings. The idea there is, there'll be no hindrance. There'll be no restraint. Nothing will hold the work up. Nothing will hold it back. When a wind blows against you, that's the wind of adversity. But this project doesn't have the wind against it. It has the wind in its favour. No such wind of adversity, no such obstacle will oppose this work. And remember that you yourself can help as a child of God. You can help to bring these events to pass, because you ought to pray for their fulfillment. That's something we often overlook. Even though we're to wait, and we're to wait patiently, it's to be an active waiting. There's things the Lord wants us to do, and one of the things he wants us to do is to pray. The Bible teaches that we're to pray for end time events to be fulfilled. Just as Daniel prayed in chapter 9 for the exile to end, when he understood the prophecies in Jeremiah about the period of the exile coming to a close, and he got down and he prayed for it to take place, in exactly the same way we're to pray for the Lord's return, for the fulfillment of these great end time prophecies. You remember the Saviour taught, we're to pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Take that prayer upon your heart. Think of the book of the Revelation. Even so come, Lord Jesus. That's the last prayer in the Bible. It has that distinction. And I urge you to pray like that for the fulfillment, the swift fulfillment of these Bible prophecies about the end time age. So there's a little just about the swiftness of the revival. Think in the third place about the symbol of this revival. Look there at verse 6. It tells us, and I said, what is it? And he said, this is an ephah that goeth forth. He said, moreover, this is their resemblance through all the earth. Here's a very important part of the chapter and the prophecy. Here is the symbol of this great Babylonian revival. And the symbol is an ephah. Now just ponder that for a moment. Isn't it very interesting, very instructive? He doesn't use the symbol of a sword, or the symbol of a scepter or a mitre. Isn't that normally how a kingdom reasserts itself, maybe through the sword or through the scepter? The symbol that he uses here is the symbol of the ephah. The ephah is the largest measure for dry goods. And the ephah reminds us of the marketplace. In the Bible, the ephah is the symbol of commerce or of finance and trade. It's the symbol of the merchant, the symbol of the trader. And why does the Lord use it here? He uses it to stress that the main focus, the main characteristic of this revival in Babylon, it will be trade and commercialism. The lesson is, there's a day coming when commerce will control the nations. Commerce will control the world. And the leader, the main center in all of that trade, is going to be the ancient city and kingdom of Babylon. And the reality, if we're honest, is that that day is dawning upon us. There are more trade agreements made and signed today than ever. It doesn't matter when the agreement is made or how it is made. It doesn't matter with whom they make it. But if it's done in the name of trade, and if it's done in the name of the economy, then as far as governments and nations are concerned, it's fine. It's okay. Let me make it clear, brethren and sisters, that future Babylon, it will be marked by military might. But that's not the aspect of Babylon that Zechariah deals with. He emphasizes here in this chapter in his prophecy, he emphasizes the commercial part of the kingdom, which will be its most distinguishing feature, the military aspect of Babylon's future, is clearly set forth in the Bible, clearly set forth in other scriptures. For example, Daniel chapter 11, one of the longest, one of maybe the most difficult chapters in the book. But it outlines the wars of Antichrist, the wars that he will fight whenever he's the king of Babylon. Daniel says, and shall assemble a multitude of great forces. Babylon will have military might. He talks as well, but in his estate shall he honour the God of forces. Isn't that an interesting statement? The God of forces. Babylon will have great military might. But here Zacharias sets forth the major symbol, the major focus of this revival in Babylon, and that will be commerce. And a very important part of it, can I stress, I want you to notice that the trade, the commerce spoken of here, there's a unity to it. Consider, for example, the two birds. Two birds flying and working together. Two groups, two parts, and they're in unity. Perhaps you could think there of the East and the West, the two main divisions of the old Roman Empire, united in the rebuilding of Babylon. But they have a united purpose. They have a united project. But notice very especially the words there at the end of verse 6. He said, moreover, this is their resemblance through all the earth. Just to make it clear, the earth spoken of there is the Roman or the prophetic earth. This is their resemblance through all the Roman or the prophetic earth. And what he's saying is that the standard of trade will be the same everywhere. You could call it a common market. It's not what we have in the European Union. That was one of the old names for the European Union. Some of you remember it been described as the common market. Well, that's what Zechariah is setting forth here. A common market. This is their resemblance through all the earth. Can I point out to you something very interesting? The ephah was measured in multiples of 10. To give you an example, Ezekiel talks about an ephah containing the 10th part of a homer. Just take the time to study those things yourself. But it's measured in multiples of 10. And how relevant that is to Europe today. Think of the decimal system introduced in Britain by European influences back in February 1971. I'm old enough even to remember it. Think of the metric system. The metric system of measurements and weights. Doesn't it all follow a decimal system, multiples of 10? You see, what we're thinking of, they're seeking to establish a common market. The resemblance is the same through all the earth. Think as well of the Eurozone. They want all the nations to use the same currency. They want all the nations to trade with the same rules, the same standards, the same prices. They want all the nations to have economies that are on the same level, the same basis. And of course that's causing great difficulty right across Europe at the present time. But that's what Zechariah is speaking about here. Common trade and a common market. These things, brethren and sisters, are unfolding before our eyes. And they're all preparing. They're all paving the way for the revival of Babylon. Can I say in the fourth place something about the structure? The structure of this revival. Today, whenever you think about centres of trade, centres of commerce and finance, you think about cities like London and New York and Tokyo. But in the future, another centre of trade is to arise. And that centre of trade is to arise in a place that you at least expect. Notice Zechariah teaches they're going to build a house. A house will be built for the ephah. In other words, a house for trade. A house for commerce. It will be a trade centre, or what we generally talk about and hear about in the news as a stock centre. A stock exchange. That's what he's thinking of here. Zechariah is revealing that there's going to be a trade centre, a trade tower, or a trade capital. And it's going to be built in the east. It's going to be built in Babylon, in the land of Iraq. Now remember, as we mentioned earlier, the Tower of Babel was out there in Iraq. And Genesis tells us something very significant about the Tower of Babel. It says they left off to build. It's not that they gave up completely. It's not that they would never return. It says they left off. The idea is they would return to it. They would come back to it. In a future day they would carry it on and they would finish it off. That's what would happen at some stage in the future. And that's what Zechariah is talking about here in this prophecy. Building a tower for trade in Shinar or in Babylon. And he says, notice the words, set there upon her own base. The idea is as if the foundation's already laid. The foundation is already existing. Something that existed there long ago. And they just need to come and complete the structure. There's going to be a fulfillment, a completion of the Tower of Babel. And what that means, brothers and sisters, is that the centre of world trade is going to move. It's going to move from the west to the east. Remember, we're told here in the passage that they carried it from one place to another. The system of commerce that was established in one country, established in one region, perhaps even established here in London, because remember, this is a great financial capital in the world today. But what has been developed in one place, it will move. It will be flown out, as it were. Flown out to Babylon. And that's what the prophet is revealing to us. It's interesting that the current headquarters of the European Central Bank there in Frankfurt, it's known as a tower. The Euro Tower. And in the future, they will build another Euro Tower. Not in Germany, but out there in Babylon. Think as well of the Twin Towers in New York, 9/11, such an infamous day in history. Those trade towers were known, or those towers were known as the World Trade Center, the World Trade Towers. They were destroyed, they were brought down, and isn't it interesting? They're not going to be rebuilt. Not going to be rebuilt again. But the Bible teaches us here in this portion that another world trade tower is to be built out in the east, not in the west, not in the United States, not in Britain. It's to be built out there in the land of Shinar. So the centre of world trade is to move. And we're told about that move. And we're told about how quickly the move will take place from west to east. Now remember, the book of the Revelation speaks about the merchants of the earth being made rich by Babylon. Don't miss it. It's significant. That means, men and women, Iraq will arise. It will arise from the ruins of war. It will become again a wealthy nation. And it's going to become such a prosperous nation that it will become a centre of world trade. And that means that a building program will be needed. A building program will have to be commenced. And a tower will be constructed. A structure suited for business is what is going to be erected out there in Babylon. Can I point out, before the Lord returns, another very significant structure will go up. You think of the temple in Jerusalem. The Bible says the Antichrist will sit in the temple. But in order for that to happen, that temple must be built. But as the temple is built in Israel, at the same time, and maybe almost in parallel, the Tower of Babel will be completed. These will be momentous days, brethren and sisters. There's one other thing I'll mention about this revival, and that's the sinfulness of it. Notice there, verse 8. He said, this is wickedness. And he cast it into the midst of the ephah. And he cast the weight of lead upon the mouth thereof. In our land, we mentioned earlier, in our churches, we're praying for a revival that is good. A revival that is godly. But I want you to see the great contrast here. Here is a revival that is sinful. And a revival that is evil at its very heart. The woman in the midst of the ephah is described as wickedness. Here you get a glimpse of what the end time is going to be like, brethren and sisters. The end time will be characterized by wickedness. Isn't that what the scriptures teach? Paul writing to Timothy, evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. As the end time approaches, the times are going to get worse. They're not going to get better. Think of post-millennialism. It teaches the golden age before the return of the Savior. Times will get better and better. But how wrong they are. That's contrary to the teaching of the Word of God. As we learn here again in Zechariah 5, the end times will be marked by great wickedness. And that will especially be true of Babylon. It's going to be an evil city. That's what the prophet's showing us. This is going to be an evil place at the time of the end. And remember that this is the same woman that John spoke of in Revelation 17. Do you remember that he said, he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet coloured beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet colour, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. The woman riding the beast. Here's the great evil religious system that's going to mark the end time age. Can I say to you that this evil religious system, it includes Rome, the Church of Rome, but it is not exclusively the Church of Rome. Revelation 17 says that Babylon is the mother of harlots. Notice the plural there. Babylon has many daughters. Babylon has spawned many evil religious systems. Rome is a prominent one of those daughters, but she's not the only one. You think of the name or the term, the title syncretism. Syncretism is abroad today. Syncretism goes further than ecumenism. Syncretism is uniting of all of the false religions of the world. And that's what's being spoken of here. That's what's been set forth. And that's what we see happening in our days. What Mr. Newton would have called latitudinarianism. He had that very significant title for us. And I want you to see that this wicked religious system, it will be at the heart of the commercial life of Babylon. It's in the ephah. It's going to be at the very heart of the commercial life of Babylon. It will have a very strong and a very evil influence upon the commerce and the trade of Babylon in that end time age. Just to point out that literally the woman the prophet saw was one woman. That's the strength of the meaning of the term there. Literally one woman. In other words, she stands out. She stands alone for her wickedness. There's not a doubt that this is the great harlot of Revelation chapter 17. And notice that the woman is restrained. She's restrained from appearing. She's restrained from working. Look at verse 7. Behold, there was lifted up a talent of lead. And this is a woman that sitteth in the midst of the ephah. And he said, this is wickedness. And he cast it into the midst of the ephah. And he cast the weight of the lead upon the mouth thereof. The woman's just restrained. She's restrained from appearing. She's kept down. God is keeping a lid. God is keeping a heavy weight on the activities of the spirit of wickedness. It will develop. It will bear great influence. But it will only do it in God's time. Doesn't that tie in well with Paul writing in 2 Thessalonians, "Now ye know what withholdeth, that he might be revealed in his time, for the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let, until it be taken out of the way." The word "let" there, of course, means to hinder. It means to hold back. He who now letteth will let, until he be taken, or he arise out of the midst, is literally the force of those words. And what is happening to wickedness is that it's being hindered. There's a time for the revealing of wickedness, but that is in God's time. And until that time, until then, it's going to be suppressed. It's going to be kept in check. But when God's time comes, then wickedness in its full and its final manifestation, it will be allowed to develop and unfold and hold sway across the earth, especially the Roman earth. And when it does have that full and final manifestation, that evil influence will especially be seen in commercial activities. Let me give you a current day example of that. You think of Sunday trading, so prevalent sadly in our land today. God's day is desecrated. And God's day is desecrated in the name of creating jobs. His day is desecrated in the name of helping the economy. Isn't that an example of the spirit of wickedness? The spirit of lawlessness that will manifest itself in Babylon in the end time. It's already at work in the business life of our nation and of our society. Governments and society today doesn't ask, is this good, what we're going to do? Is this something that's right before God? What governments and society today asks is, does it pay? Does it make money? Even if every law of God is broken in the fulfillment of it, the all-important thing is that commerce must be advanced. And more that spirit, that attitude will be evident until its full and final manifestation appears when Babylon is revived, and is revived as a commercial centre of the world. The revival of Babylon and Babylonianism. Can I say this to you just in closing, give you this thought? Think of what Jeremiah said, what he prophesied away back in the days of Zedekiah, king of Judah. Think of these words, they're very significant to our theme tonight. Jeremiah said, "And the Chaldeans shall come again." The Chaldeans, of course, are the Babylonians. Brethren and sisters, the Lord is coming again. Praise his name. That's the great hope of the church. But just before the Lord comes again, the Chaldeans, or Babylon, will come again. They will be revived on the earth. And we need to watch for it. And I urge you to do that. And I trust that this message, a little of what we have said tonight, will be a help for you, even to that end. Let me read that final verse to you again, just as we finish. "He said unto me, to build it an house in the land of Shinar, and it shall be established and set there upon her own base." I pray the Lord will bless his word tonight to every heart.